All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, January 12th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 26 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. I took a quick look at the map before we went on air, and it looks like there's lake effect snow to the east, to the west, and to the south of me. Not quite here yet, but it should be at some point in the future today. They're threatening. Where did we leave off yesterday? If I can scroll, I'll let you know. I don't know. I had to reboot and do all kinds of things today, and I'm still having trouble. We titled the show Brain Hacking, Remote Behavior Biomonitoring. hold on. Computer's not working as fast as my brain. And diagnoses. We looked at all kinds of weird things that they have been working on as far as brain and mental health goes. Good old Tommy Insel, moving from the director of the national director of the Institute of Mental Health to Google to go work for their life sciences division called Verily. And his big push is going to be diagnosing mental disease with smartphone apps. So pay attention to that, because we really dug into like how psychosis is now considered a spectrum disorder. And they have certain telltale signs that they can distinguish in your voice that supposedly show that you are suffering from some sort of mental disease. And as we see this push for gun control, the circumvention of HIPAA laws, so they, you know, can give it up if you've been in to see a psychiatrist and having some issues, be able to give that to the FBI for their background check database. You know, you start to see a scary picture that things that you thought were private, thoughts that you thought were your own, are not going to necessarily be that way forever. So careful what you say. Careful who you talk to. Careful what you say on your phone even. I mean, that's really a frightening thought, because all it would take was a covert installation, which it can be done very easily on not only your phone but on your PC as well, of some sort of analytic software to then throw your voice into a database and run an algorithm and be able to determine that it's time to dispatch the white coats. Where we're going to continue today, so we ended the show looking at some stuff about DARPA using electricity, lasers, sound waves, and magnets. We discovered that they were already had figured out how to use the vagus nerve to be able to influence the brain using electrical impulses. Actually, let's start here. I don't think we're really going to do brain stuff today. I want to get into some genetic modification of creatures and people and some of the things that they're working on. But here's an interesting story that I found after the show yesterday. And we may have touched on this when it first came out, but anything that comes out of MIT Technology Review or any of the large universities that are part of the lizard's den, I typically pay attention. This one came out of MIT Technology Review, May 29th of 2014. So if there ever was a doubt that their progress in testing in humans and technology with some of this brain interface stuff is far down the line, check this out. Remember, too, back a few months ago, National Geographic did live television implant of a brain-computer interface to help them with Parkinson's patients, and it would cause the brain to produce dopamine, which helps Parkinson's. We had saw right at the end of the show yesterday that at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas that just is finishing up or maybe finished up the last day or two, they were talking about all this mind control gear that is going to roll out this year using, it's almost like an ECG on your brain. It's a little headset that goes on and it can read your brain waves to control outside devices. And there's even going to be a developer's kit that is released here in the not too distant future. But what's scary about that is as they are reading your brain waves and being able to determine what you want to do by the frequencies coming out of your brain, don't think that that isn't going to be databased somewhere on the back end and then utilized to either make some sort of bio brain print of you, because remember, your mapping of your neural circuits are as individualized as your fingerprints. So once they get a good imprint of how your brain works, they will be able to use that as an identifier, but they'll also be able to use that to determine not only pre-crime, but to determine whether or not you're mentally ill and other things, of invasive things of that nature. So check this out. May 29, 2014. Military. We know, of course, military is DARPA. Military funds. Brain-computer interfaces to control feelings. Again, this is out of the MIT Technology Review. A $70 million program will try to develop brain implants able to regulate emotions in the mentally ill. Now, this was May of 2014. Like I said, we know that just a few months ago, they did an implant of one of these brain-computer interfaces to be able to cause the brain to express dopamine. The Department of Defense and DARPA have been working also on these brain-computer interfaces to use on soldiers, not only for people suffering from PTSD, but also for soldiers in the field. So when they start to feel things such as fear, they can push a button and cause them to produce adrenaline or dopamine, things to get them over the hesitation that might be caused by their fear while they are facing dire circumstances in the battlefield. Researcher Jose Carmina has worked for years training mock monkeys to move computer cursors and robotic limbs with their minds. Hey, check that out. Isn't that what we were talking about rolling out at the Consumer Electronics Show? He does so a little bit different. He does so by implanting electrodes into their brain to monitor their neural activity, and now part of a sweeping $70 million program funded by the U.S. military. Carmina has a new goal: to use these brain implants to read and then control the emotions of mentally ill people. Uh-oh. So when you couple that with all the stuff that we read yesterday with Tommy Insel moving over to Google, all the connections between Google and DARPA, all these new consumer electronics coming out that read your brain waves, and there was even one that we read about that will specifically do what they're talking about here, cause you to release certain brain chemicals, one being dopamine, and it felt quote-unquote euphoric, you see that there are a lot of connections forming. Says this week at the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, they had awarded two large contracts to Massachusetts General Hospital and the University of California, San Francisco to create electrical brain implants capable of treating seven psychiatric conditions, including addiction, and yes, they're going to come after the alcohol, depression, and borderline personality disorder. Now, yesterday, we had also read about bipolar as being another one, as well as schizophrenia and depression, I think were the three. It says this project builds on the expanding knowledge about how the brain works, and yes, it's all part of the Global Brain Project. The development of microelectronic systems that can fit in the body, implantables, this one happens to be in the brain, and substantial evidence that thoughts as well as actions can be altered by well-placed electrical impulses to the brain. Now, if you weren't scared before, I'd be scared now. I'm telling you, I just saw something the other day, too, that now they are talking about the FDA approving electroshock therapy as an approved treatment. And some people were telling me in chat the other day that that's always been an approved treatment. I know way back when it was. I don't know if they discontinued that. But in reading stories like this, where they're talking about using electrical impulses in the brain to cure mental illness, and then seeing an FDA, a story on the FDA approving electroshock therapies, it makes me wonder if these aren't all connected, because I believe that they are. And it says, imagine if I have, and not me, this is the writer of the story, if I have an addiction to alcohol and I have a craving, says Carmina, who is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and involved in the project, we would be able to detect that feeling and then stimulate inside the brain to stop it from happening. The U.S. faces an epidemic of mental illness among veterans, including suicide rates 3 to 4 times that of the general public. But drugs and talk therapy are of very limited use, which is why the military, of course, they always have a good excuse for doing their mad science gone mad experiments, which is why the military is turning to neurological devices, says Justin Sanchez, manager of the DARPA program known as Subnets, S-U-B-N-E-T-S. And we've talked about that one before. Subnets is an acronym for systems-based neurotechnology for emerging therapies. Quote, we want to understand the brain networks in neuropsychiatric illness, develop technology to measure them, and then do precision signaling to the brain, says Sanchez. It is something completely different and new, and these devices do not exist yet. Now, if we remember some of what Tommy Insel talked about in his New York Times article, he said that the problem with diagnosing mental illness now is that we do not have any type of real biological tests that we can do to determine mental illness. It's all about thoughts, feelings, reactions. But unlike being able to diagnose things such as, let's say, cancer or cholesterol levels or lead levels in the blood or whatever, you know, they have a test for that that shows certain elevated readings or whatever to be able to determine that, yes, that is what your affliction is. But for mental illness, they don't have anything like that except for your behavioral patterns. So now they want to be able to not only measure things going on in the brain and the signaling, but to be able to then intervene and change those. Under these contracts, which are the largest awards so far to support President Obama's brain initiative, ding, 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 the brain mapping program launched by the White House last year, UCSF, and that is the University of California, San Francisco, will receive as much as $26 million and Mass General up to $30 million. Companies including the medical device giant Medtronics and startup Corterra Neurotechnologies, and I believe we actually read about them yesterday, a spinoff from UC Berkeley's Wireless Laboratory. So I'm sure they know all kinds about how different electromagnetic frequencies affect the brain. We will supply technology for this effort, which is the brain mapping program. And initial research will be in animals, but DARPA hopes to reach human tests within 2 or 3 years. And like I said, we had a National Geographic implant already using the same technology for trying to cure Parkinson's patients with the release of dopamine via an electrical jolt. This research built on a small but quickly growing market for devices that work by stimulating nerves, both inside the brain and outside of it. And yes, we hit a story yesterday that talked about the vagus nerve again, that connects to all the organs in your body. And that is the main direct connect between your gut microbiome and your brain. It says more than 110,000 Parkinson's patients have already received deep brain stimulators built by Medtronics that control body tremors by sending electrical pulses into the brain. And more recently, doctors have used such stimulators to treat severe cases of obsessive compulsive disorders as well. Last November, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, so this is in 2013, approved NeuroPace, which was the first implant that both records from the brain, ding, ding, and stimulates it. It is used to watch for epileptic seizures and then stop them with electrical pulses. And altogether, U.S. doctors bill about $2.6 billion worth of neurostimulation devices a year, according to industry estimates. So there you go, guys. I mean, brain implants are already a $2.6 billion segment of the medical industrial complex. Put on a freaking seatbelt, because as we determined in this story, we have mental illness at epidemic proportions. And now that they are going to diagnose as a spectrum disorder with smartphone apps. I see there's all kinds of money to be made for a lot of people. Tommy Insel and Google are going to make out just fine. The new line of research has been dubbed, quote, effective with an A, brain-computer interfaces by some, meaning electronic devices that alter feelings, perhaps under direct control of a patient's thoughts and wishes. Basically, we are trying to build the next generation of psychiatric brain stimulators. Darren Doherty, a psychiatrist who directs Mass General's Division of Neurotherapeutics, says one aim could be to extinguish fear in veterans. Ding, this is what I was talking about. The whole reason that DARPA first started this development with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, fear is generated in the amygdala. It's too funny. You know what I mean. Amygdala. Say that five times fast. A part of the brain involved in your emotional memories, but it can be repressed by signals in another region, the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. The idea would be to decode a signal in the amygdala showing overactivity and then stimulate elsewhere to suppress that fear. Such research isn't without ominous overtones. Dun, dun, dun. In the 1970s, Yale University, another lizard's pit, neuroscientist Jose Delgado showed, is that the same guy? Wait, what? What was the guy's name? Jose Carmina, and now Jose Delgado, apparently. Oh, shit, I scrolled and I lost my place. There we go. Jose Delgado showed that he could cause people to feel emotions like relaxation or anxiety using implants he called stimosievers. But Delgado, also funded by the military, left the U.S. after congressional hearings in which he was accused of developing totalitarian mind control devices. Now, how freaky odd is that? And there is a link to that story. You know what? I'm going to actually, we're not going to do that today, but I'm going to copy that link address. Hold on one second. Do 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 do. Intermission music. Do 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 do. All right. I'm going to load that one up to read after the show. According to the scientists funded by DARPA, the agency has been anxious about how the subnets program could be perceived. You think so? And it has appointed an ethics panel to oversee the research. And of course, we just feel so warm and fuzzy about any type of ethics that are determined by people connected to DARPA. Psychiatric implants would in fact control how mentally ill people act, although in many cases indirectly, by changing how they feel. And for instance, a stimulator that stops craving for cocaine would alter an addict's behavior. It's to change what people feel and to change what they do. Those are very intimately tied. Now let's think about that. Change how people feel. Well, look, hey, you're feeling this anger toward some sort of perceived outside threat. And in our case, it happens to be an overarching, overbearing, over-encroaching government that's taking away all of our liberties. Taking away our liberties to the point of cellular and mental capacity. With all of these new tools that they have to not only diagnose, but then to quote unquote cure you of what they subjectively determine to be normal. Okay? Remember, it's all subjective according to society, and we are outcasts. I'm going to just do an aside here. You know, I mentioned yesterday about David Bowie, and I was processing still his death, and I still feel very bad about it. I spent a good part of the afternoon while I was working digging into some of the other posts that lots of strangers that I didn't know made, but some of their thoughts and how they felt about his death. And one of the overwhelming things that I kept seeing over and over and over and over again, and it's exactly how I felt, so it really kind of validated my feelings is that the one thing that Bowie, I don't even know the word, the one thing that he embodied for my entire generation, and maybe not everybody, but for a lot of us, was that it was okay to be different. You didn't have to conform. You didn't have to do it because everybody else was doing it. You didn't have to bend to peer pressure. And what's so interesting about what's happening right now in our country is that they are using, again, conformity, peer pressure to try to force us, those of us who are calling bullshit on the system, they are trying to force us into changing our opinion. They're trying to convince us that we are wrong because we are going, quote unquote, against the grain, but we are not wrong. We are looking at things from a different perspective. And just because your perspective is different than my perspective doesn't necessarily mean that we are all, either of us, 100% wrong. And as a matter of fact, it currently has gone way beyond just a difference of opinion now. They're trying to use peer pressure. Like, for example, the pro-vaccers, the rabid mama bears that they've convinced the vaccines are good, and that little Johnny not getting his measles vaccine is going to kill their child. And so all those anti-vaxxers out there that are questioning the science behind the poison, behind the former biowarfare program that's now been spun into some happy, fuzzy, keep your kids safe type program. They're trying to use peer pressure of those mothers, of those talking heads that don't do their own research and just do what everybody else does, to show that we're the lunatics, to say that we're the anti-science people, to say that we're the insurgents, to say that we're the terrorists, because now we're terrorizing your son with little Johnny. He's become the Typhoid Mary. Guys, this all connects together. You know, we don't have any public figures much out there anymore that go against the grain just for the sake of being themselves. You know, you look at popular culture out there and it's all some sort of, I don't know what it is now, some sort of morphed project freak. It's not about being different. It's about being freak is normal. And being freak is not normal. Being yourself is normal. Not trying to be like the people that now think it's trendy to be freak. To not believe in having a gender. To not procreate. I mean, people don't see that it is leading to the fall of Western civilization. Our morals. You know, the things that used to be dictated by religion, and I know religion is just another big way of controlling you, but the one thing that religion did at least provide in our grandparents' time, especially back a couple generations ago, was at least a framework of ethics and morals, a framework of family, a framework of community where people came together and helped each other and cared about each other. You know, as time went on and the generations went on, it became a group of hypocrites who went to church on Sunday to say that they were such a good person and then went home and kicked the dog and punched their wife in the face. You know, so it's all been mutated. It's all mutated. Just like now, biology is being mutated on the planet. All right, that was enough of a tangent rant, but I brought us back. So let's get back to these psychiatric implants by DARPA. According to the scientists funded by DARPA, the agency has been anxious about how the subnets program could be perceived, and it has appointed an ethics panel to oversee the research. Ethics have been mutated. Psychiatric implants would, in fact, control how mentally people act, although in many cases indirectly by changing how they feel. Doherty has a brain implant. Says that a brain implant would only be considered for patients truly debilitated by mental illness. Yeah, that's in 2014. And wait, remember, we're all being self-radicalized over the internet, too. And they did find the area of the brain that is responsible for radicalization. And those who cannot be helped by drugs and psychotherapy. This is never going to be the first line option. Well, phew. Oh, you have PTSD. Let's do surgery, says Doherty. This is going to be for people who do not respond to treatment. So good thing. Good thing we don't have to worry about being black bagged with a brain implant put in first thing. That might be after week number one in solitary confinement. All right, so we read a story now. We're going to get into some mutations here for a bit if any of these stories load. I promised that we were going to talk about this one a few days ago, and I rescued it from my other machine because my browser was frozen. So I had to copy all the links and transfer them over to this computer. This is December 20th, 2015, so it's a couple weeks ago. First genetically edited cows arrive at UC Davis. So again, the University of California University System that is now overseen by who? Who took that top spot? Cupid Doll, anybody? Ding, did a ding. Janet Napolitano. Yeah, she went from Homeland Security to the president of the University of California University System. I believe that one, but it's true. So in light of talking about some of the GMO animals that have been happening, we talked about the Chinese cloning factory where they're cloning cows. They're going to clone pigs and potentially humans, as well as the clone pigs that are going to be for sale for consumption, not only in Canada, but potentially for sale in the United States. We now have genetically modified cows for the very first time arrive at UC Davis in California. It says the two calves that graced the muddy pen on the UC Davis campus will never grow horns typical of their breed, because instead, they will always sport soft hair on the parts of their head where those hard mounds normally emerged. Named Spotigy and Burry, the calves were designed in a petri dish at the Minnesota-based genetics lab with the goal of making them easier to pack into pens and trucks without the nuisance of their horns taking up valuable space. Wow, that's pretty horrible. Just so we could pack them into pens more densely, we just flipped some switches in this entire breed's DNA to turn off those pesky horns. So now we can pack them in like Legos. Their offspring may also lack horns, and generations of now hornless cows could follow, potentially saving the dairy and the cattle industry millions of dollars, said Allison Van Eneham, a geneticist at the UC Davis College of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences, who works with the Minnesota lab called Recombinetics, Recombinetics. This first-of-its-kind result of a process called genetic editing is a test run that is expected to deeply impact the cattle and dairy industry and the entire food supply. Ding, da ding. Now, this is very scary because they've been talking about this for a while, and everyone said, oh, it's too expensive to genetically modify cows. Don't worry about it. They're not going to do it. It's not going to end up in the food supply. But we found out a long time ago that clones and cloning had already been approved in the U.S. food supply back from 2008. And the USDA doesn't currently know how much of it, or even if it is, in the food supply, because they pretty much gave the food producers carte blanche, saying it was safe. A potato is a potato. A tomato is a tomato. A cow is a cow. Males grow faster than females. And in beef production, that is more desirable. Another project uses stem cells to produce cloned animals. And genetic editing could also help design cows that are less prone to pneumonia, which would reduce their need for antibiotics. Wow, listen to this. It's just so happy and good for everybody. It's good for you because you won't have so many antibiotics in your meat. It's good for the farmers because they can pack more cows into crates to ship them off for slaughter. This is just wonderful genetic editing. Van Eneham is keen on using word processing as an analogy to describe the differences between genetic editing and engineering. She likens genetic editing to changing the spelling of a word within a document, And genetic engineering is pasting in a word from a completely different document. She says, you're not bringing in anything foreign, like introducing a protein from a tomato into a fish. Yeah, well, I think actually they did that the other way around. They introduced a protein from an Arctic flounder or something into a tomato so the tomato didn't freeze when it got cold outside. But she says that is genetic engineering. And with these two dairy calves, a precise section of DNA responsible for horn growth was knocked out and replaced with a precise section from a cow that does not produce that trait. Well, is that kind of like the genetically engineered cows in China, where they knocked out the genes responsible for milk production and inserted genes from a human that is responsible for milk production, allowing the cow to then produce human milk? Oh, maybe. I'd say so. Many varieties of cattle do not grow horns, including the Angus. And with dairy cattle, both male and female, horns are a given, and the animals are dehorned soon after they are born. Oh, I didn't know that. Once the cows are sexually mature, Van Anaheim will collect semen from the bulls to inseminate horned cows, the route by which most cows are impregnated in cattle and the dairy industry. And the plan is to track the calves born and their development to see whether the two faithfully transmit the hornless trait onto their offspring. The odds are 100% if Mendelian genetics hold true, she says. She added that it is not clear whether other unexpected effects of editing will appear. Ding, ding, ding. And that's the whole big issue that I have with all of this, is that when you flip one switch, there is no way to know without generations worth of research what that's going to mean in the future. And not just for the animals that are being genetically edited, but for the creatures like humans that then eat or consume byproducts of those genetically modified animals or foods, right? Vegetables, fruits, whatever. If successful, it will allow the industry to bypass decades of breeding for polled or hornless cows. Orville cattle rancher Megan Brown raises polled Herefords, and which she purchases dehorned, and these animals were selectively bred for the trait. And that's what they do. That's what farmers always did in the past with their crops. They would selectively breed by combining pollen from one type of plant that had desirable traits with another to get it then to produce something that was completely different. But that's not genetic editing. That's selective breeding. And typically, the horns are cut off the animal, which can be a heavy expense and cause a lot of suffering. The cost of dehorning can actually be a lot, especially if the cow gets an infection from the removal and dies. So I didn't know that could happen either. It says at the University of Missouri, researchers focus now on genetically modifying pigs as well to remove genetic traits for maladies such as retinitis pigmentosa, hemophilia, and cystic fibrosis. And until now, physicians had nothing until we made these pigs. There was nothing to experiment on except kids that had cystic fibrosis. So now they can go in and monitor the progression of this disease and come up with treatments and cures that you could not try because of ethics on a human first. Yeah, unless the 21st Century Care Act passes, and then we can get some of these treatments out to the most direly ill before there's been any type of FDA approval. The Australian-born Van Anaheim makes no apologies for genetic editing in a state where genetically modified food has been a hot-button issue, and she even bristles at the notion that genetically modified organisms could bring on health risks. And in fact, she believes that genetic editing can be as good for an animal as it is for the food supply. All right, honey. Yeah, I think you need to go have your head checked. Scientists at Washington State University have already identified a gene that makes cows less susceptible to respiratory diseases, and some of those cows that carry the edited gene in utero are scheduled to be shipped to UC Davis in 2016. The USDA data has already shown that nearly one-third of all cattle deaths are due to respiratory issues. And the public will consume animals who may have never been sick with this technology. She also says that genetic editing offers an environmental benefit, especially with cows producing methane. Yeah, and we talked about that as well with all the drumbeats of, you know, climate change and how our foods that we eat today are not sustainable. Many times we've already seen cropping up in articles and videos is the UN talking about insect protein being so much more sustainable than beef in particular, because beef produce methane. It's great that they tie now genetically modified animals, especially cattle, into being better for the climate, because cows produce methane that are identified as a significant contributor to global climate change. Quote, when you are able to breed animals that are healthier and better suited for the environment, you need less of them to produce the same amount of product. Now, what is it going to take for them to start genetically modifying beans, let's say? I'm being kind of crude here, but beans also cause humans to produce methane. Are beans going to be considered ecologically unsustainable in the future? I mean, this is just insane. We are literally playing gods, and we do not have the ethical, moral backbone of gods. Everything is subjective. What's good for you may not be good for me, but you're going to tell me it's good for me and then force me to accept it, that it is good for me based upon peer pressure laws. And if nothing else, if none of that works, then just the slick willy by slipping it into the food supply, like we found out has already been happening for GMO vegetables and fruits that we were never told about, and then consume them. So 20 years later, they can go, oh, guess what? You guys have been eating them for 20 years already. Another story, GMO pigs coming soon with the help of the USDA and biotech. I don't know. I'm having lots of difficulty making anything scroll. Here we go. Is it any surprise that the swine of biotech and the infiltrated USDA are trying to create GMO pigs? An unfunded cooperative agreement between the USDA's Agricultural Research Services and a currently unnamed corporation plans to address the, quote, boar taint problem, which causes a pig's meat to smell of male reproductive organs by altering a pig's genome. What? Yes, GMO pigs are in the making, all because the male pigs have an offensive odor that can make their meat ill-fit for the market. Biotech scientists are certain that they can create a taint-free boar through a process that edits a pig's genome rather than introducing any DNA foreign to the species, as has been done with many GMO experiments like BT corn or Roundup Ready soy. So do you guys hear, like, there seems to be a common theme here. They're trying to call now that just because they edit DNA, if they're not introducing some foreign organism into the DNA of the animal or the food or whatever they're editing, and it just happens to be that they're changing the DNA, that it's not really genetic modification, wink. These experts feel that by avoiding any interspecies mixing, the pigs would be, quote, much more likely to be approved for human consumption by the Food and Drug Administration, as well as other regulatory agencies. So when an unnamed company alters a male pig's sex organs, who is next in line? A monkey's? A humans, a mosquito. Oh, wait, yes. And we spent days on these guys in Oxitec, now owned by InterExon. GMO mosquitoes are already out there and being modified using the CRISPR-Cas9 technology. And, you know, you look at things like what's happening in Brazil with that Zika virus. and the correlation between the release of those GMO mosquitoes in Brazil happening last June of 2015. And then by like September of 2015, we already had epidemic proportions of this new disease that had never before really been seen in any numbers in Brazil before that time. It really makes you wonder if there wasn't some sort of side effect or some sort of breeding that then they started producing. I don't know. It seems very fishy to me that they introduced genetically modified organisms that then in the same area, just months later, we now have epidemic proportions of something that was never there before. Like I said, where is the long-term research? And our globe is becoming a petri dish right now. But it's always in the name to keep you safe. That was to battle dengue fever, because, you know, climate change is making it move. It's moving northward. By the way, speaking of Zika, I don't know if anyone saw, but they are predicting by spring, Zika virus is going to hit Texas. And didn't say exactly where, but I would imagine that probably starting on the Gulf Coast where it's nice and moist and humid. But how long before it starts moving into other states that have a similar climate like Louisiana, Florida, and some of the others? I know already down in the Keys, they were trying to release those GMO mosquitoes for dengue. And people were pitching a fit because they didn't want them. So instead, they just had the ones that were 20 size normal blow in on Hurricane Debbie. You remember that? So they just blew in there. Don't worry about it. The hurricane brought him in. All right. Anyway, Adam Shriver, an ethicist and philosopher of cognitive science at the University of Pennsylvania, has paid particular attention to the Bohr Taint Project because, quote, it differs from most proposed applications of genetic modification. He proposes, quote, that the main concerns over GMO wouldn't really apply in this case. If you combine DNA from different animals or insert new genetic information, you don't know what the results will be. But in this case, it doesn't involve any insertion of DNA. So go back to sleep, people. These GMO pigs are not the pigs you are looking for. Yes, just altering the DNA. This could likely be another vile campaign by the U.S. government to alter human DNA. And yes, I could agree with that, because we've also found research that has shown that DNA from things that we ingest could very easily pass through our gut in the small intestine and enter our bloodstream and be absorbed by our DNA without being broken down into its component proteins and amino acids. Take, for example, the government-supported experiment conducted with the help of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigation, which we found out in listening to Corbett's interview this past Sunday, and I believe it runs again tonight. Let's take a look. If you missed it, you got to hear it. It was really good. Is Corbett on Tuesday? No, I ran it yesterday. Sorry, guys. But it is up on his website, CorbettReport.com. He did an interview with Guns and Butter and talked about two documentaries he had done. One was about the oil industry running everything. And it was really amazing because he was able to tie the petroleum industry not only to petroleum and them running everything as that, but also into the pharmaceutical industry. The Rockefeller Institute has been behind a lot of this. And some of the genetic modification, the biotech that's happening right now is just absolutely amazing. The dots that connected for me listening to that interview. So I'd highly recommend it. But yes, take, for example, the government-supported experiment conducted with the help of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Investigation, which infected human subjects with cancer cells. And yeah, that was in some of the vaccines, the SV40, or the U.S. military's research on biological weapons. Yes, that is Plum Island that we've talked about many, many times at Fort Detrick, Maryland, since the 1940s. And remember, that never ended. They just ended us developing quote-unquote biological weapons in 1972, but that did not end the development of vaccines to protect against those biological entities. And while producing those vaccinations, you also have to have your hands on those poisons. So, you know, we've kept it going on. We also investigated, too, the use of insects, entomological warfare, as the disease vector, not just mosquitoes, but also ticks and fleas. And, you know, there's a lot of that going on right now. All right, that's about it. I found a bunch of stuff about human experimentation, too, yesterday when I was digging through another story that gave all kinds of great links to Freedom of Information Act PDFs that I want to dig into. So that might be for a future show. All right, so if I can get this one to load, come on, baby. I don't know, I click on it, it's already there, but nothing on the page loads when you click on it, so I'm staring at a white page right now. Come on, this gets really frustrating. This is on computer number 2 this morning. Let's go. It was a new story on that Chinese cloning factory. Hurry it up, Chuck. Let's go. Here we go. Chinese firm chief executive says human cloning already possible. Boya Life Group, a Chinese cloning company, announced last month, and that was in December, that it is setting up shop in Tijian. And I believe that's where those big explosions were back a few months ago. A northern port city, along with their partner, Soyam, S-O-O-A-M, Biotech Research Foundation. By mid-2016, Boya Life said in a statement, Tianjin will become the home to a fully functioning animal cloning facility. Boya Life explains, quote, the plant in Tianjin Economic and Technological Development Area, a government-sponsored business development park, will clone animals, including sniffer and pet dogs, beef cattle, and racehorses, and it'll produce 100,000 cattle embryos a year initially, eventually increasing that to 1 million cows a year, says Zhu Ziachun, board chairman of Boya Life. The idea is to clone cattle for consumption in an effort to combat China's beef shortage. But in an interview with the Agence France Press, Zhu said that his plan for the cloning facility goes far beyond 100,000 cloned cows. Zhu wants to clone humans, as he says he already can, but he won't for now. From AFP is the source, quote, the technology is already there, said Zhu. If this is allowed, and there have been international groups that have said, no way, Jose, you're not going to be able to do that. I don't think there are other companies better than Boya Life to make that better technology. The firm does not currently engage in human cloning activities, wink, at least not in the front room. Remember, China has an entire generation of boys without wives. Adding that it has to be, quote, self-restrained, unquote, because of possible adverse reactions. In other words, Zhu thinks BioLife could totally clone humans if everyone suddenly got cool about cloning humans. And he thinks they might, now that homophobia is on the outs. Here's AFP parsing through that faulty logic. He says social values can change, citing the changing views of homosexuality and suggesting that in time, humans could have more choices about their own reproduction. Ultimately, or unfortunately, currently, the only way to have a child is to have it be half its mom, half its dad, he said. But maybe in the future, you'll have 3 choices instead of 1. You'll either have 50-50, or you can choose to have the genetics 100% from daddy or 100% from mommy. This is only a choice. Zhu is not the only one with creepy plans for cloning. Last year, the South Korean, again, another South Korean company, the South Korean Soyam Biotech launched their dog cloning service. And yeah, this is the one to bring Fido back from the dead. And they actually did just clone a pet for somebody for $100,000. Zoo will likely face challenges even before humans are added to the list of clonable animals. The New York Times reported that the project has not been given its final approval by the Chinese government. Quote, before bringing cloned beef to the market, says Mr. Zhu, his company must receive the approval of the Ministry of Agriculture and other government agencies. But he did not elaborate. Good luck, we guess. And you know, the thing is, so he's getting approval from the Chinese government. Like I said, there's an entire generation of Chinese boys without wives. They've since changed the one-child policy. So future generations might have spouses. You're allowed to have two kids now. But on the other hand, why would they not be doing things like DARPA wants to do, being able to engineer some sort of super soldier? You know, DARPA is looking at it by being able to add chips and control the brain. But I could guarantee you that the Chinese government is looking at building some sort of army. So now, there was a story out of Huffington Post, believe it or not. And now here's one out of Wired. I've had this one queued up since December 1st for you guys. You're only human, but your kids could be so much more. Yes. And, you know, this really is going to become peer pressure. If they ever approve this technology, and you know that they're going to, especially to the rich and powerful that can afford it, you're going to have children having things such as their intelligence level. I mean, they're identifying these genes right as we speak. Their intelligence level augmented at birth. So they will have like super brains, and your kid will no longer be able to compete against people who have had their brains genetically modified, genetically improved, connected directly to the machine for augmented cognition, let's say. I mean, they've been talking about that already. And I mean, it's moving to that point with implantables and, you know, brain computer interfaces. You will be at a disadvantage if you do not have your newborn child connected to the machine. I mean, what a horrifying thought this is. Have you ever wished that there were something different about yourself? Maybe you imagine yourself taller, thinner, stronger, smarter, more attractive, or healthier. Or perhaps, as much as you love your children, you wish that there was something different about them. It's not that the love is missing, but it is precisely because you love them. Oh, yeah. Again, you know, I'll tell you what. Interesting, at that CES, that Consumer Electronics show we read about yesterday with some of those brain reading devices, one of them was one that would produce dopamine, which of course is the addictive chemical, which is just such a horrible idea. But one of the other chemicals they talked about being able to produce with that was oxytocin. We really dug into oxytocin a while back. That is the mama bear chemical. That is the love chemical. And to be able to produce oxytocin and apply it toward feeling euphoric or love for something. Talk about, you know, being able to suck you into the machine. Talk about mind F that they could play with you once you have the device on your head. They could be doing, I mean, they know enough about mind control now that maybe every time on a screen you look at something like genetically modified fruit, I don't know, they start zapping your brain to produce oxytocin. So now you start to feel this very strong love for things that maybe you previously hated, disliked, felt negatively about. It's very frightening. Don't buy any of those mind control devices. Don't buy Google Glass, anything that has access to your optic nerve with a direct connect to your brain. Trust me, this will not be used for your benefit. Yeah, it's a cool toy. Yeah, let's work on that dopamine. People love that dangling technology carrot. They just eat it right up. But as you eat up the next generation, it sucks you more and more into the machine. These new VR goggles, this is the next step to pull you into that matrix. Anyway, so perhaps you love, you know, as much as you love your children, you wish that there was something different about them. And it's not that the love is missing, but it is precisely because you love them that you might imagine they would be happier if they were different in some way. It is also possible that some form of genetic disease runs in your family, or a predisposition to cancer, Alzheimer's, or some other potentially terrible health problem. until recently, you would have been able to do very little, if anything, about these situations, thoughts, and feelings. However, that soon might change. While you might not be able to fundamentally transform yourself or your existing children, and I'm going to say already since December, that has changed. I have a story. The first live mammal has been edited and replicated throughout its body to make some changes to its DNA. And I don't know if we're going to get to that today, but we will kick off with that tomorrow if that is the case. While you may not be able to fundamentally transform yourself or your existing children in the near future, you might just be able to play God with your new own little creations. Think of it as a very personal kind of experiment. Technology that is already available today may well make this experimentation possible for anyone who can, pay the price to make a new person, only one that is hoped to be quote unquote better. I mean, as designer baby, you would literally be designing and producing a new type of baby via the same sort of technology that is used to make a GMO tomato, a mouse, or a monkey, and the baby would be a genetically modified human, or to phrase it as an edgier manner, a GM human. Well, would it be legal? In some places, yes. Would it be ethical? Well, hard to say, but I have my doubts. Well, me too. Is it risky? Definitely. But regardless of such thorny issues, it would be technically feasible to attempt. And you can bet, and I told you that, it's absolutely, somebody will try to do this in the next coming years. The point of my bluntly laying out the incredible possibilities of what a designer baby technology might be able to do for you was to illustrate how seductive it may be for many of us. And yeah, guys, it's the poison apple. Like I said, you know, maybe the Bible was an allegory, but beware of the poison apple and trying to be like gods. And I don't care what religion it is, to be able to aspire to be gods and to create life, to be able to monitor life, manipulate life to a cellular DNA level is beyond evil. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Tuesday night. Lots of great radio. Mr. Kevin Blanch.